Hello and welcome to Capital Ideas. This is where we sit down with members of the Democratic majority in the Washington State House of Representatives to give listeners an inside look at important aspects of how their citizen legislature works and who and what it's working for. Today we're talking with Representative Judy Cliburn. For the last decade, she's represented the state's 41st legislative district, which includes Mercer Island, Newcastle, and parts of Bellevue, Renton, and Issaquah. She graduated from the University of Washington with a nursing degree and worked at Harborview, but her resume also includes stints as executive director of the Mercer Island Chamber of Commerce, as a member of the island's city council, and finally as its mayor. Today, she chairs the House Transportation Committee, a full-time job in itself, and finds time to serve on the House Healthcare and Wellness Committee as well. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Judy.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is a crucial time here in Washington for transportation issues and for healthcare as well. But before we talk about those and other legislative topics, let me ask you how you went from a career in medicine to one in public life.
Oh, you know, that's interesting because I started so young. I was a parent, and I had a child who was taking classes at the city recreational department. And when I went down to get involved, I ended up getting involved with the city. I think most parents get involved with the PTA. And I ended up getting involved with my kids at a city level and worked my way up in just getting involved to become an elected official.
At what point did you decide that you would try to move from a local level to the state level?
Well, one of the things that, when I quit my elected position at the city, I thought I had retired. And then I got recruited to run for the legislature. It was not my idea.
Nevertheless, you found yourself here. And a few years later, you're sitting at the head of one of the three major budget writing committees here in the legislature. How did you find yourself in that position, charged with writing a multi-billion dollar budget every 2 years?
Well, if I had thought about it like that, I might have been intimidated. But what I was looking for was a place where I could make a difference. And since I had been on transportation for a number of years when the chairmanship came about, I looked at what my options were and decided that if I was going to make a difference in as short a period of time as I had to serve, that I should probably be a chair.
You've been in that position for a few years now, and you may be looking at the most daunting task that you've ever dealt with. The Governor's Connecting Washington Task Force has identified about $21 billion in transportation work that needs to be done in the coming decade. I've done the math on that, and that works out to about $3,100 a piece for each person in this state. This is a state where people went to the polls not long ago to reject the idea of paying a few cents tax on a candy bar. Can you be optimistic about the future of transportation here when the price tag is that huge?
I think you have to line it up where people can understand exactly what they're getting. And I don't think you bite off the whole apple at one time. And we've never done it in big chunks, although I think the 9.5 cent gas tax was a fairly substantial step in the right direction. I think the hardest part is going to be to convince people why you don't have enough gas tax. And that's because the gas tax is bonded. The existing gas tax is pretty much bonded around the projects we're already completing. So when you go out and you ask for more, I think that that's going to be the biggest barrier. I do think that if they know exactly what it is you're doing with that money, there's some chance for success, but I don't think you can ever go out with as big a jump as we did in the past. So if you look at that and then you say, well, what else would you do? I think we're working towards a new way of funding transportation. And maybe we do that before the next 10 years. Maybe we do it in 6 years where we go to vehicle miles traveled. And because the technology is there to do that, we have already started in this biennium. In fact, in the supplemental budget, we have the first step at looking at what would vehicle miles traveled look like. And that is a much more sustainable way to fund transportation. That doesn't mean that you can charge enough money to do everything all at once. You still have to line it up so that people feel comfortable about what they're paying for and that they see the need. That's part of the education that I think we have to do over the next few years.
And this is the kind of increase in revenue that the public would need to vote on.
Yes, I think they will. And vehicle miles traveled is more of a user fee. It actually is very much what we used to think of as the gas tax was the same for everybody. And so it was the proxy for vehicle miles traveled. Now you have cars with different mileage. You have cars that don't even use gas. So it is different. And if we go to a vehicle miles traveled, there will be a fairness issue that I think people will respond to. But I think that means we might have to look at, do we keep the gas tax at its current level or do we make it more revenue neutral? Those are the kinds of things that we really need more input from the public.
Let's talk about another kind of revenue that involves transportation, and that's tolls.
Yes.
I know that there are some projects in this state that currently have tolls. There have been. There will be more in the very near future. In your opinion, why does there tend to be such resistance to tolls, other than the obvious that people don't want to pay more money? But in terms of understanding this idea, even in notoriously anti-government states like Texas, tolls are traditional ways of paying for transportation projects and raising money for transportation in general.
You use the word traditional. Traditional is not what we have had here. Tolls have not been our tradition. So you get people who come from the East Coast, they don't know what all the furor is. And so as people travel around the world, they do experience tolling and they are more understanding. I'm surprised we don't have more pushback. It's usually the pushback from the first project. Certainly the Tacoma Narrows Bridge was a huge lift. Not quite as hard for the 520 bridge, which is more expensive and very different in concept. And people haven't been as irate about the tolling as much as they wanted us to start quicker and look like we knew what we were doing. I think it was very difficult to sell to the public that we were doing a good job because of the delays. But now people have settled down. And I also think there's the fear that we're going to use tolls everywhere. But I don't go there because I think we'll go to vehicle miles traveled before we go toll everything in sight. So you have to have the appropriate density and the appropriate project. So tolling can pay for part of a large project like the Columbia River Crossing, but you're going to need other money to get that completed. Tolls can pay for the 520 bridge if you toll I-90 or come up with more money from somewhere else. And there will be pushback for every toll facility, but in concept, people do understand that if we're going to pay for these particular projects, particularly in bridges and things that we can, the tunnel, they can really identify that they're paying for the use of that facility. And I'm surprised we haven't had more pushback. I think it's been more accepted than I expected it to be.
Let me change gears here for a minute and talk about something that is in the news quite a bit, particularly with the presidential primaries going on right now, and that's partisanship. Throughout the country and increasingly here in Washington, partisanship reigns. You're in a special session right now because of it to some degree. But year after year, people on both sides of the aisle seem to point to you as someone who transcends that divide. Just a couple of weeks ago on the House floor, the top-ranking Republican on the Transportation Committee, and this is someone who would gladly take your chair away in an instant if his party could achieve a majority here, had this to say about you, and this is Republican Mike Armstrong from Wenatchee. He said, "The process that went on in this transportation supplemental budget shows the best of what we can do here in Olympia. It shows what the citizens of Washington State expect us to do, and that is work across the aisle, forget our differences, and try to find the common ground that we know exists." A few days later, he sent an op-ed to papers around the state saying essentially the same thing and specifically naming you as someone responsible for this cooperative atmosphere. What's with you anyway?
I know. Well, you know, I didn't come from partisanship. If you look at local governments, they are not Republican and Democratic. And I don't think transportation lends itself to being partisan. There aren't Republican roads and potholes are not Democratic or Republican. And I know people say that. but because I have always worked with people who I value the team more than the individual, and particularly because I think you get a better product, we have developed a cabinet method of doing our transportation budget. By having everybody at the table, everybody knows where there are no skeletons and there are no secrets. And sometimes I don't get exactly what I want. And it works that way because then there's that respect that comes from being a part of the process. I do think it's easier in transportation, but it doesn't have to be that much easier. And I would hope that people will use that ability to look at each other and say, why are we having this difference and how would we get to yes? And use it in the other budgets. I think it would be very valuable for us.
Let me talk a minute about you as a local legislator. You're the chair of the Transportation Committee. It's got statewide responsibilities, but you're sent here every 2 years by the people of the 41st District. You were the prime sponsor of 22 bills during the past couple of years, and with a handful of exceptions, they dealt with some aspect of transportation. That's understandable, and if people realized how demanding it is to chair a major fiscal committee, they might be surprised you had time for anything else. But imagine that I'm one of your constituents in the 41st District. Tell me how you go about your other job, which is to serve me and to be a voice for me.
Well, one of the things that is very interesting about the east side of the lake, that whole suburban crest, we were all elected as Democrats about the same time. It had been a Republican stronghold. So we're talking about this bipartisan nature that we had before. Actually, we all came in and we're not that different from the people who were in the seats as Republicans because it's a business-oriented area. The suburban crest is very sophisticated, it's educated, very oriented around big business, but also lots of small business. So you can't go off and divorce yourself and not deal with the things that are important. The year that I ran, the most important thing was transportation. So the first thing I did was come down and tell my speaker, we need to raise the gas tax. He had never had anybody run on raising a gas tax, but I did. After the second week of doorbelling, I knew that everybody was angry that nobody in the legislature would raise the gas tax. So when you start that way, transportation lends itself to economic development and how those businesses connect to either themselves or to the rest of the world. And when I talk, the other things that I do with healthcare or any of the other kinds of issues that come up, I can link them to the fact that this district that I am working in as a leader, that I can always connect it back to what they think is important.
Speaking of healthcare, long before you took over the chairmanship of the Transportation Committee, you sponsored one of the most significant pieces of healthcare legislation in the state's history. Tell me about the Apple Health Program, something that you and Speaker of the House Frank Chop collaborated on.
We called it Cover All Kids. At that point, it didn't have the name Apple Health. I liked Apple Health. That's a good name for it. Because I was a new legislator, I was asked to sponsor it, and I really didn't understand how significant it was until I had started working on it. And I worked with a number of stakeholders. As you can tell from my other efforts, I really appreciate having everybody around the table so that I hear what is going on. So with a large stakeholder group, we moved forward, and I educated myself on what we had, which was a children's health care service, but it had stumbled because of budget cuts. And we put the new bill in place to cover all kids by the year 2010. As the budgets changed, we had to back off at what level we would cover. And hopefully we can continue on to 2014 so that as the Affordable Health Care Act goes into effect, children will become more covered than they are even now. But it has been a top priority. If you're going to prioritize, you should prioritize around children.
You've been here 10 years now. Can you remember what surprised you most about being in the legislature? Something that that people simply could not know until they find themselves in the middle of this process?
I sure can. I have to laugh because I did not want to come because I thought it was full. The legislature was full of really stupid people who were just not working, that they came down here and they just turned into these lazy people because they couldn't get anything accomplished. So the most amazing thing was to come down here and see how hard everybody worked. People work so hard. Now, the fact that they're not all working in the same direction does lend itself to being a little difficult. But they are people who are equally committed to their districts and what's important to their districts. And if you look at the changes that occur, let's say one year somebody leaves and they send another representative, it always amazes me at how similar the person they send in their place is almost identical in the tenor and in the way they see the world because they come from that district. So lightening up on how we should all be the same, if you embrace the fact that we are all in this from our districts and slightly different and try and find the commonality, it is a little bit rewarding to get something done. But I don't call anybody that is down here lazy anymore. That was the big learn.
So people all got smarter the year you came.
Yeah, I guess so.
Can you point to one accomplishment that's given you the most satisfaction during your time here?
I guess I would have to say put two different projects together, the Alaskan Way Viaduct Tunnel and the 520 Bridge. They are both right up there together because the Alaskan Way Viaduct replacement and the bridge are both critically important because of safety issues and had been tied up almost equally as long for 10 to 15 years in just process. And I call it knock them loose and get them out of the process and into actually being built. I could go home today and just be really proud. It is really, really important that those get done, and I feel like I made a difference because of being here.
What keeps you wanting to come back?
Well, when it stops being enjoyable or productive, I will go home, unless somebody decides that I'm going to go home before my time. And so far, even though I've been here 10 years, it feels like two, and I just can't believe how quickly it's gone. But I love what I'm doing. So when it's not fun anymore, I'm going to be more than happy to let somebody else take my place. And I also feel that people keep sending me back. So they must like what I'm doing.
Apparently so. We're about out of time, Judy. Is there anything you would like to talk about before we wrap up here?
I don't think so. I think you've been very thorough.
Thank you, Judy Cliburn, for spending some time with us today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's today's program. Subscribe to this podcast now on iTunes or on the House Democratic Caucus webpage and spend a few minutes a week with Capital Ideas. After all, it's your state government, and the more you know about how it works for One Washington, the better it can work for you. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats.